What's up, everyone? This is Dariusz Kalbarczyk, founder of NG Poland, JS Poland, Quick Poland, AngularMaster.dev and WorkshopFest.dev. Welcome back to the JavaScript Master Podcast. Today, we've got a special guest from Brussels, Belgium. Passionate developer, speaker, co-founder and CTO at Half Rosa. Ladies and gentlemen, Antoine Perret. Hi, Antoine. How are you?
I'm doing quite well, thank you. You know, it's a busy time at work with lots of things happening. It's always good when things are lots of things are happening at the same time, and you're shipping stuff to users in production, etc. So quite exciting time. What about you?
I'm great. Thank you so much. For those who don't know you yet, please tell us about yourself and what you do.
I'm a health tech entrepreneur. And so for the past 10 years, I've been building products for health professionals and for patients. I'm passionate about healthcare. I'm passionate about building products for people. Nowadays, I'm the co-founder and CTO of Rosa. And Rosa is a not-for-profit that is building a patient application. So our vision is that we want people to be able to manage their health using their smartphone. So that the image is really this: to have your healthcare with you or your health companion with you every day, because it's on your phone, in your pocket. So that is what we want to do. But before getting there, before being able to ship a patient application, you need traction, you need users. And so the way we decided to kind of the path that we chose to get there was to first build an online booking platform. So today, Rosa offers an online booking platform with, on one side, health professionals, and on the other side, patients. And so patients can go on the platform to find, book, and also pay the health professionals. On the other side, you have these health professionals who can have a public profile, online presence, who can manage their schedule and appointments, and also attest the care that they give to their patients. And we started with kind of small group practices or individual health professionals. And as we gain more and more traction, then we also approach hospitals. And so today we are entering the hospital market. And so Rosa is, if we succeed, and I believe we will, Rosa is becoming the de facto standard in Belgium for patients to book appointments at the hospital. And so it will be the first time that a patient can experience looking for a specialist, go on a platform and search for a cardiologist in Brussels, and then have like the availabilities of all cardiologists in Brussels, whatever the hospital they're practicing at.
It sounds very interesting. Let's back up a bit now. How did your programming adventure begin?
So quite some time ago. You know, I was that kid. I must have been something like 10 or 12. And I remember buying a magazine and going back home with that tutorial about building a website. And so it was all about putting some content on a web page using HTML, CSS. And sometimes I went crazy and even got some text moving from left to right. It was a red text moving from left to right using JavaScript. After that, I kept on discovering programming, kept on discovering the web. Also used a lot of Python back then because I needed something to manipulate data. So for example, for my master thesis, when I was at university, I was performing computer simulations that outputted a lot of text. And so I had to manipulate that text to extract relevant data, to plot it, etc. And so I used a lot of Python. Nowadays, I'm very much focused on the web, on TypeScript. That's where my passion lies, because it's like the web is that amazing platform where you build something, you ship it, and then anyone with an internet connection can access it, can use it. And that is like an amazing time to be into the tech space and building for the web.
Let's talk about Quick. Why did you choose Quick?
When you think about it, I want to mention or kind of illustrate what I'm going to say by talking about go-to applications. So you know that Rosa wants to build an app, okay, an app for to manage healthcare through using a smartphone. There are some go-to apps such as Airbnb or Uber Eats. So meaning that when people start to think about planning their vacation, they directly go to Airbnb and look for a place to stay. The same is true when you're hungry at work or at home and you want to order some food. You go to Uber Eats and you order some food. The thing is, Rosa is not a go-to app yet. We even don't have an app yet. And so the thing is, we are very much in the business of SEO today, because the way that people will discover Rosa is because they're going to open their web browser, they're going to go to Google, and they're going to search for a dentist in London, for example, or a physiotherapist in Warsaw, Poland. And so when they search using Google, they're going to see all those search results. Okay. And so in the end, Rosa is in the business of, or Rosa needs to score super high in terms of search engines, and we need to be the best we can in terms of SEO. Now, the thing is, Rosa is a new player. So there are existing players that are bigger than us, that have more health professionals, that have more content, that have just that have been there for so long that they have a better page authority, etc. So Rosa needs to compete with them, and it is a two-sided market where you have health professionals on the side, you have patients on the other, and so you want as many health professionals to attract patients, and you want as many patients to attract health professionals. To be sure that you score high on SEO, you need to convince health professionals to have a public page, so that when you go on Rosa.be and you look for cardiologists and Brussels, you do have a result. Another way to see that is you can view that as a matrix. You have locations which are columns, and you have the rows, which are the specialties. And you need to have results for each box in that matrix. But so you have those holes, you have those pitfalls because you're new. And so in the end, the only thing you can compete with is the technology, that is the speed at which you're delivering your applications and the speed at which you provide that patient experience. And so that's why it matters so much for Rosa to score high on SEO, that we wanted to have the best performing application possible. And Quick was that framework, or is that framework, that is able to provide that instant application and that instant interactivity that no other framework can offer. And so that's why at some point we said, okay, we can't compete on content, we're too young. We can't compete on page authority. We can't compete on XYZ. So let's at least make sure that on the tech part, we are at the best, in the best shape possible.
How did you get the buy-in of your team?
I love the question, because I've been following Quick for quite some time. And at some point, I'll be honest, I was quite obsessed with Quick, because I've been searching for a solution where we can have the perfect user experience consistently over time. And we did crazy things using Angular back then to kind of server-side render or server-generate some pages, and then ship pure HTML, and then kind of add just the tiny bits of JavaScript required to add interactivity, and it worked quite well for, I would say, a marketing website, etc., but it was not scalable when you wanted to have more interactivity. I've been looking for such a tech, and Quick was exactly that idea. So I was obsessed with Quick. But then when I talked with the team, some team members wanted to kind of choose technologies such as Next or Remix, because they were kind of safer choices, because they were mainstream and they didn't have the risk that Quick had. I personally was convinced that no other framework could compete with Quick. I was convinced that Quick was unique in its approach, in the results it could achieve. And so at some point, it's a trade-off. You have you have like all that data and you need to make sense of it and you need to make a call. And so the way I rationalized and I convinced the team was to say the product itself or the technology itself, the ideas behind Quick, the design behind Quick, that is unique. No one else has that. Then there's the fact that Builder.io was behind the project. And for them, having that technology is key to their success. And then you also look at who is behind it, beyond the company itself, and you look at the team. And when you look at the team, you have Mishko, you have Adam, you have Manu, you have Sammy. And Mishko has been in the business of building frameworks for more than a decade. So he knew exactly what he was doing. And all the pain that I felt, he described it perfectly. And so he knew exactly what he was doing. He had the experience. Adam and Manu had the experience from Sunso, from Build-A-Gin. And so I had like, I was completely sold out on the idea, the company that was behind it and the team that was behind it. And so I said to the team, at some point, even if we fail, or even if Quick fails, it's okay. We can start over in Remix, we can start over in Next. But today, all the data points towards the right direction. Quick is going to be a complete, I would say, revolution in how we build web applications, and we can't afford not picking that, because it is a game changer and it is what we need from a business point of view, because we need to be on top of a game when it comes to SEO.
What is unique about Quick? What does Quick have that no other framework has?
It's a good question, and I remember like reading a tweet from Steve, the CEO of Builder, and he was looking for ideas about how to market Quick and say, hey, what is the one sentence you would put on the landing page of Quick? Then I was thinking about, hey, what is unique about Quick? What is the thing that Quick has no other has? And to me, it's really this. It's Quick gives you instant applications, instant interactivity at any scale, constantly over time. And so what you have at day one, what you have at day zero when you start, you will have it like 3 months after, you will have it 6 months after. So it doesn't matter at what scale you build, it doesn't matter how big your app is, it doesn't matter how many pages you have, it doesn't matter how many, I would say, pieces of interactivity you have, you will keep the same amazing performance over time. Because it is possible to achieve great Likert scores or great Web Core Vital scores with mostly any technology. Okay, just pick the right use case or just optimize it so much up to a point where it is so you can put so much engineering effort and then obtain great results. But that's the key part with Quick. You don't have to think about it. You have it for free. You don't have to invest a lot of engineering effort to obtain that amazing performance, that amazing user experience. You have it from day one, and you kind of have a guarantee that you'll still have a year from now, 3 years from now. And even though there are always, you know, food guns, okay, with any technology, in my experience, you have way less food guns with Quick than you have with any other thing. And so that's kind of what makes Quick unique. The same performance that you get from day one with no effort will remain and stay there for as long as you keep on using the framework.
What did you build using Quick? What strategy did you use?
Rosa has two kinds of, as I said, Rosa is a kind of a marketplace, or we have a two-sided market. We have health professionals on the side, and we have patients on the other. And these two, I would call them persona, have a very different usage profile. So health professionals, B2B, basically open the app in the morning. Okay, they calendar with their schedule. They open the app in the morning, and they're going to use it for an entire day. And so there, you could argue that having an instant application is less important than for patients who are going to use your app once in a while. Okay, you got sick, or you need to find an appointment for your annual checkup at the dentist. You don't do that every day or multiple times a day. So you open the app at one point in time, then you could forget about it and come back later. Performance is more important for B2C than it is for B2B. We do have these two kinds of applications. And initially, we had everything written in Angular. And then for B2C, when we started to have more and more, I would say, content on the platform, and so when we started to fill in that matrix I was talking about, and then it made sense for us to invest in performance and SEO. And so we decided to rewrite that main app into Quick. And so we progressively did it on a page per page basis. So what we did was we set up a CloudFront in front of our two applications. And then depending on the route, we were redirecting to the Quick app or to the Angular app. And so progressively as we go, we progressively rewrote part of the parts of the app as time passed. In that process, we also had like we did page to page and then with CloudFront we could choose what we served. And it was also kind of a safety or reassuring for some team members, because we could switch back to Angular if we wanted, which in the end we never did. But the idea of having that reverse proxy on top or in front of it allowed us to not go for a big bang change, like working for 6 months to rebuild the entire app, and then you know that big stressful moment where you hit the button to make the switch. So we did that progressively. So that's the first part. The second part was a new app that we were building, also for B2C. So where we said, okay, Quick is a no-brainer. We're going to use that. And there at some point, we had some components that either were too big or too complex, or would take too much time to rewrite in Quick, or basically that we knew we wanted to change at some point, rewrite or redesign. And so for these components, it was not the right setup to change them and rewrite them in Quick at that point, we basically put them into an iframe. And so we had that iframe into that Quick application, and that iframe was loading components that were still built using Angular. So what we built is our two applications, one fully, I will say, a fully new application with an iframe, and another application which was a complete rewrite of the Angular, kind of legacy Angular application.
What result did you achieve? Did Quick deliver on its promise?
So from a technical point of view, if you look at the metrics, okay, if you look at Lighthouse scores, if you look at Web Core Vitals, all those metrics are through the roof. Okay, so in terms of going from a Hello World example and compare that Hello World example with what we have at Rosa, the performance is exactly the same. And so, yes, Quick delivered on its promises regarding the performance. But all of that, you know, is very technical. Okay, I could show you graphs, I could show you numbers of amazing, I would say, LCP scores, whatever. But really, the thing that the story that I want to share with you is this: we had a board meeting yesterday, and my co-founder and CEO shared a story with the board. He was on a meeting. He was at the hospital on a sales meeting, trying to convince that hospital to use Rosa. And that hospital is kind of outside or far away from the big city. It's located at a place region where the cell network is bad. Okay, so those people are used to or suffering every day from slow loading web applications, slow loading websites. And so you're inside of a hospital, inside of a meeting room with those thick concrete walls. The signal inside is weak, and you can't use Wi-Fi because of security measures within the hospital. And so Seb started to make the demo with the using his smartphone as an internet provider, And the entire room was completely blown away by how fast the application was loading. They were blown away by how fast it was possible to interact with the application, up to a point where someone asked the question, hey, wait, is that a video? Was this pre-recorded? And then said, well, no, it's just because we're using the best technology possible to achieve that. And no one can beat that. This is just the best you can. And so to me, that is what matters, because in the end, measurements with work avoidance are important, LIGHTHOUSE scores are important, but in the end, what matters is the end user experience. And here we kind of had proof that we succeeded, and Qwik helped us succeed where no other frameworks could have achieved that.
What were the biggest challenges in developing applications in this innovative framework?
So a couple of things. So when you think about it, because so we started to actually code in Qwik with the multiple teams back in summer 2022. So I remember having a hackathon with a team where we compared Astro, we compared Remix, we compared Qwik, and in the end we chose Qwik. And so back then it was not even in beta phase. Okay, back then a Qwik City was not even a thing. Okay, so it was really, really early days. And so we played with something like an SPA router for Qwik at some point. And so when you start so early, you don't have prior art. Okay, so you have to discover things yourself. There are some APIs that are changing because the framework is evolving. And so you're trying to build on top of something that is a moving target. And so that was probably the hardest part. But there we received an incredible, tremendous support from the Qwik team. And so we were in touch with Mishko, with Manu, with Adam, and they helped us or wonders, hey, we need to change that API for XYZ. And in the end, yes, we took a hit in terms of delivery speed, but that hit was kind of mastered. And with the help of the Qwik team, we managed to ship into production as we wanted. And now we are in the beta phase. We are very close to the 1.0 release. Things are stable, and I would say the operations in production are just amazing in delivery. So that's a pretty good news.
What should we pay special attention to when writing an application in Qwik?
A couple of things. So to me, it is important to understand what makes Qwik so different. So the thing I always say to people learning new stuff, or people, even people switching making a switch to a career in tech, is don't just learn a framework or just don't learn XYZ. Try to understand what's behind it, because when you understand how it works behind the scene, you can use it to the best of its abilities. So understand why it is different. Understand the difference between resumability and hydration, because it will help you down the road when it matters. The funny thing with Qwik is that I rediscovered a couple of things that we all had forgotten, like the size of your images matter, the speed of your backend matters. Should you inline CSS? Should you inline images? Or should you make multiple network calls? And so you kind of start to rediscover once you take JavaScript and you remove it from the equation, because that's basically what Qwik does in the end. It's like you don't pay anything you do not have to load that big chunk of JavaScript initially. And so because you don't have that, then all the other small issues start to pop up. Okay, because previously your big JavaScript bundle was kind of hiding, okay, all the other issues. And so you had that big shadow that was hiding everything. You remove that big chunk of JavaScript thanks to Qwik, and then you start to discover, oh, in fact, it might be smarter to do one request with to get your HTML page with everything inline in it. And then you start to benchmark and to compare two things. You start to discover that the speed of your API call actually matters, and that you might have to reconsider the algorithm that you had implemented initially in the backend, or to start to realize that in fact what you need is a caching layer at your API level, because your front end is so fast that you need that speed, that extra speed from your backend to kind of benefit from Qwik 100%.
What are the key success factors of Qwik?
So to me, it's Qwik is, as I said, it's like you have that unique value proposition. Okay, so you got instant applications are instantly interactive without putting any engineering effort, and you keep that over time. That is kind of to me, its unique value proposition is really important. And then when I think about it, and that is something I shared with Mishko, I told him, like, look, Mishko, initially, I was sold on the ideas of Qwik, but then I started to use it and play with it, and then there were all these crazy things with these tutorials, etc., and things that were really, really completely different from what people were used to, which were really difficult to wrap your head around. And so to me, at some point, one of the key success factors for Qwik is the fact that they decided to adopt tier 6, so that they basically said, okay, we have that proof of concept with QRL, and to begin show that resumability is possible, but the effort to go to resumability was too high. And so at some point they said, okay, how can we solve that? And so they said, React is the framework that is the most popular. Why can't we use a syntax similar to React? Why can't we use TSX and then have our own, I would say, code optimizer that will tear down your code, split it rebuild it to have these small chunks that you can load, have these extract the code, have the right lexical scope provided at the right place, etc. And so that to me was formally the key change that made Qwik ready for everyone. This one, and then there's also the fact that it is possible to adopt Qwik progressively. Because they chose to have TSX, they also implemented a Qwikify function. So basically, it is a utility function that you can pass a React component to, and then it will become usable from within your Qwik application. And so it means that you can build your app in Qwik, and then for the parts that are, for example, you need a specific component, a data table component that is not natively written in Qwik, you can use the React ecosystem and leverage it until a point in time where eventually that component will also be available in Qwik. And that is also valid with Angular. And when you think about what Rosa did, we kind of had an iframe where we put an Angular component in it. But that is a good solution. A better solution is to also leverage a Qwikify for Angular. And that is something that that Valo Software built in the end. So it was funny because I gave that talk at NGB together with Mishko back in March. And a couple of days later, Valo Software released that Angular Qwikify utility. And I was discussing with Dimitri the other day, and I told him, like, hey, you know that you made my talk obsolete. And then he said, no, the way to present it is to say that having an iframe is good, having using Angular Qwikify is better, and then going for Qwik is the best you can. And so I really enjoyed the way to put it, like, good, better, best. But so definitely the fact that you can progressively adopt Qwik is something that is key to its success.
Do you think Quick is ready for production?
So we've been using Quick in production since October 2022. What I can tell you is the framework is now stable. The framework offers all the features you need to build any type of web application. And that for the past 6 months, we've not encountered, I would say, any significant issue in production. Okay, so we do deploy our Quick applications on AWS. So we have a setup with CloudFront. So we have a caching layer with CloudFront, and then we have an Express server that is taking care of SSR. We've not seen issues in terms of performance, even when the load is higher, and you can even play with the caching layer in CloudFront, because some of the pages, once they are server side rendered, they can stay. If they do not change a lot, you can keep a cache. You can keep them in cache for 1 minute, 5 minutes, whatever works for your application. So is Quick ready to for production? I would say definitely yes. We've been doing that for the past 6 months, and the feedback that we had from our users and also from the metrics that we have is I would say it's all green, it's all good from that point of view.
How about documentation?
So I think that the Quick team has put a lot of efforts into the documentation, and it was also one of the focus for the past few weeks and for the next few days until 1.0, to say that they want to be sure that when someone starts to use Quick, they do not encounter that tiny small bug or detail which is not documented, or which is like a 1 or 2 hour fix. And so they've put a lot of effort now to make sure that there are no that things are ironed out, etc. When you look at the community with people such as Shai, and they have a dedicated team to documentation that is trying to improve the documentation on a daily basis. I've personally not suffered from a lack of documentation, so I think we all good on that side too.
Is Quick prepared for testing?
Yes, and so we've been using Quick together with different frameworks. So we've been using Quick with component testing and Storybook. It's been working great. So what you have to know about Rosa is that we have all code resides in a mono repo. So we manage all code within the Next. And so we already had all the tooling with Cypress, with Storybook. And so when we started to bring Quick into our code base, we wanted to have the same level of quality that we had with the Angular applications. And so we wanted to have component testing. We wanted to have end-to-end testing, and all of that is possible. When it comes to component testing, you can use Storybook, but you can also use Cypress component testing. So no issue whatsoever on that part.
What kind of person is Antoine? How do you see yourself?
So I'm a very extrovert person, and sometimes it's funny because a lot of developers are more introverts, but I'm kind of when we do personal tests, I'm always like one of the most extroverts in the room. So I'm definitely an extrovert and kind of a special kind of a developer. And beyond that, I would say that I'm just a normal person, father of three. I do love sports outside of coding. I do a lot of cycling. I try to I try to have compassion and to understand how people work, what is important to them, and to care about them, because I think that as a CTO, that is also part of my job to care about my team. And maybe one thing that is important is when you hire, it is important to not try to hire people who are just like you, and because otherwise you would have a tendency to have just, you know, not copy paste of yourself, but at least some personality traits that you will find, and you would have a very typical team. So I try to kind of have a team which is as diverse as possible, both in terms of and when you think about diversity, you can think about you know, go to the cliche of the gender diversity, but in the end, what matters is really to assemble a team who can think at a problem or look at a problem from different angles, to that's the way people live or experience something is different from one another, so that you try to cover all the cases. One thing I'm very proud about with my team is that we have close to 50% of women in the engineering department. And once again, it's not about you know, quotas or having like reaching 50% of gender equality, etc. The goal is having a set of people who are diverse enough to cover all the ways you can think about a problem. And so you want people who take the time to deep dive into something. You want people who are into who have a bias for action, so that you have balance. Okay, so for example, myself, when there's something I want to jump into it, I'm really into the action. And so it's important for me to be counterbalanced by other people who will say, well, you know, you're going too fast. Let me double check this and that. Another example is I'm always a very optimistic person, and so when you ask me for estimates, I will be very optimistic, because I see a way forward. I see success down the road, and then I need people who will tell me, look, Antoine, remember that last time where you said this. Okay, and then I say, yes, I remember. Yes, I was wrong. Let us talk. Let us reconsider. One thing that is very specific about me is I tend to be more calm when the pressure is higher. So that is really funny, because when we do have issues in production, some people freak out. I become more calm. And so I remember at a previous company, previous startup, we were rolling out a new product, and we had issues. We were using CouchDB back then, and we had issues with synchronization between the databases. And I was on the phone with one of the suppliers, the person who was managing those clusters of CouchDB, CouchDB clusters, and he was literally telling me, Antoine, I know there's an issue because you're so calm. And so it's funny to see how different people will react to stress level or last minute changes, etc. And so once again, it's important to have that balance, because if you only have people who are excited about last minute changes, about urgency, emergencies, etc., then you might build the wrong culture at a company. So it's important to have that diversity built in right away.
Creating a startup costs a lot of efforts. Do you have some hints for us regarding self-organizations?
Yeah, there are a couple of things that I can share. Probably one of the things, and it might be cliche, but it's like really eat that frog. So do the thing that you would like to push back as far as possible, pick it and start it, start with it at the beginning of the day. So eat that frog in the morning. As soon as you wake up, eat it. And that is something that I have to constantly fight for, because I will have the tendency to say, yeah, or to make up some excuses not to do it, to say that, oh yeah, I know that I have to answer that important email, but yeah, there's a performance issue on CI, let me fix that. No, don't do that, because otherwise you keep on having that mental load because of that frog that you refuse to eat. So just do it and you'll feel better, and then you're free, your mind is free for the rest of the day. Another thing is, it's really, really important to say no. And especially if you like me are an extrovert, or if you're very optimistic. So I get excited with, I can get excited quite fast. And then, yes, of course, it's possible to do that. Yes, of course, it would be exciting to do this. But at some point, success at a company, success at a startup boils down to focus, being able to focus on one objective and focus on it so much that you say no to everything else. There was that, I don't remember where I saw that, whether it was a tweet or something like that, but it was like, hey, your default answer should be no, unless it is hell yeah. And so that is a good example where to help people accept that no is good for an answer, because sometimes you have that feeling that, oh, you're not dependable if you say no, you're not reliable if you say no. But sometimes saying no is about self-respect for the other, because you don't want to say yes and then do the thing in a rush and don't meet the bar that you used to. So learn to say no and focus is key. But then there's also the one other part, which is all about, so we in the industry we have that issue with the imposter syndrome, and so we have that issue with the fear of missing out. And so if I have to constantly repeat to myself that it's okay, that we have to take it easy, because it's not because you hear all those people talking about all those topics and that you don't know about all those topics yourself, it's still okay, because the mental picture that you have might be that they are all experts in all of the fields combined, but in the end, that is not true. They might be experts in that particular aspect of fraud, that they might be experts in that particular, I would say, aspect of DevOps or the backend or the database, etc. And it's okay, you're enough. You are enough. You know enough. And so take it easy. And if there's that new technique and you don't use it, it's still okay. And so to me, that is something that that is quite important.
What's about your work-life balance? Do you have some hints for us?
I will start by saying that I'm probably not a good example. Because I have a tendency to work too much. And when I talk about it with friends and family, it's some people do not understand. And to me, it boils down to passion. It boils down to your energy levels. If you are in an environment where you're passionate, where you have a great team and you work a lot, but you enjoy yourself, then I don't see a problem, because you will be able to keep your energy levels at the right spot. On the other hand, if the environment in which you work is toxic, it doesn't matter whether you work like 4 hours a day or 10 hours a day, you will burn out eventually. So it's to me, it's all a matter of finding the right balance in terms of energy. Another thing is, some people will talk about time and say, oh, you know, it's important to have that work-life balance, and it's important to keep some quality time with friends and family. But the concept of time does not actually exist, or the concept of quality time does not exist. And it's not something that I came up with. I don't remember where I read it. But there was that person saying that quality time does not exist. Time does exist. And then maybe eventually that time that you spend with your kid, with your significant other, with your friends will be of great quality. You can't program when you will have the best laugh with your kid. You can't plan that. You can't say, hey, tomorrow 12 p.m. Tomorrow 2 p.m. I'm going to take a break of 2 hours and we're going to have the best time of our life. But you can't schedule that. You just schedule time and then you might have the time of your life for those, I would say 30 minutes, 2 hours, whatever. And so because there's no concept of quality time, just be in the moment. So when you do spend time, okay, be mindful about that and then put all the rest away. The worst fights I have with my wife or with my kids is because, hey, Dad, you're here, but you're physically present, but you're not with us. And it's not only a matter of, oh, but you have your smartphone or you have your computer. It's not about the device or the tools, because you can be physically present and then think about something else. And so when you're there with your friends, your family, your kids, just be there and forget about everything else. It doesn't matter at that point in time. So that definitely is something to pay attention to. The other aspect is you need at some point to recharge your batteries. And so know yourself and know what is giving you energy and what is draining energy out of you. As I said, I'm an extrovert. So when I interact with people, I feel good. And so there's nothing better for me than a good meeting with a whiteboard. Okay, because I'm gonna jump from one idea to another. I'm gonna exchange with people, and I just love it. For introverts, this might be a bad setup for them. And so know yourself so that you can manage your energy levels, and know what you need to recharge. So I have the privilege to commute by bike and to love cycling. And so if I had a rough day, I know that I will push hard on my pedals on my way home, and I will evacuate frustration, stress, and everything. And then I will come home and I will be back at the right energy level thanks to that. And then yeah, I have my apartment bike just behind me, and I'm using it as much as I can, watching videos online or just distracting myself. But this is really my go-to activity when I need to escape something. I'm going outside or just riding my bike in my office or taking a walk.
Next question is, what keeps you up at night?
I'll not talk about the kids, right? Because, so as I said, I have three kids, and one of them is a baby. He's 5 months old, and he's not sleeping that well. But beyond that, I'm a co-founder, I'm a CEO, and so I'm obsessed mostly about three things. I'm obsessed about security, I'm obsessed about being mission critical, and I'm obsessed about the developer experience. I'm obsessed about security because when you think about it, the worst case scenario, the one thing that could kill Rosa is we have a security breach, because we're dealing with medical data. Even today, if we don't have, strict medical data, appointments can be viewed as administrative data. But if you put different appointments, a sequence of appointments together, you can start to connect the dots and infer some medical information out of it. You go and see a knee surgeon 2 times and then a PT 10 times, you probably had a knee surgery. The only question is, hey, was it the right knee or the left knee? And so security is like super important. If we have a security breach, it could kill Rosa. Then it's all about mission critical. Even booking an appointment online is becoming mission critical. People rely on Rosa to be able to book an appointment online. You could even argue that if people can't book, some of them might get worse, or that the disease might worsen over time because they can't book the right appointment at the right time. If Rosa fails on giving you the right appointment at the right time, then we fail on our mission. So it's important to us to be mission critical, which means that we have to pay attention to how fast we deliver our application. We have to pay attention to the user experience. That's why Quick is important, for example. We have to always be on top of the game when it comes to being able to ship fast. And I will make a stretch and link that together with the also the developer experience. The one thing that I'm working hard on nowadays is to improve the CI/CD pipeline that we have. I'm obsessed with the fact that I want a pipeline, or at least the build time of the pipeline needs to be as short as possible, because one day we'll need it badly, okay? Because there's a bug that we ship, because there's a security that issue, vulnerability that we need to patch. That day, we will need a super fast pipeline badly. Today, we are partnering with the team from Valor to integrate Etherscan into our tooling, so that we can build our NAST application faster, so that we can build our serverless application faster. And instead of having a build time of 30-ish minutes, you had to bring it down to 5, or maybe can we even bring it down to 2 minutes? Because then it's like, oh, we know that we can deliver on being mission critical the day it will matter the most. And at the same time, that is linked to developer experience, because it means that the feedback loop that you have when you develop is super short.
Are there things you are proud about?
I'm quite proud about lots of things, and I think it is important to celebrate successes. So it is, especially in the startup world, it is too easy to forget about everything you already achieved and to only see what's left. Okay, because then you quickly become overwhelmed by, oh, I still have to do all that stuff, this all of that happening. And so always celebrate your successes and be proud of what you achieved. I'm super proud of my kids and my family, of course. I'm also super proud of being part of Rosa. I'm grateful because I have that amazing setup with Rosa is a not-for-profit, so we're here for because you want to have an impact, you want to improve the health of people. And today, I'm proud and grateful that we have a team of 40 people, 20 of them in my engineering teams, and yes, that is something it's a good time to be in tech, a good time to be working like here in Belgium with Rosa.
A book you would recommend to our listeners?
So people don't see the background because there will be no video, right? So I have that shelf behind me with a lot of books. That is a fight that I have with my wife quite often, because I have a tendency to buy too many books and then I'm not always reading them all, okay? But I do love books. There are some. I'm gonna list like three of them. So one is Make Time, and it is linked to the topic that we had just a couple of minutes ago. So Make Time is about being intentional with your time. It's about saying that it's there's no judgment about how you spend time, but you need to know and to be intentional about it. So you want to spend an hour of your time on Facebook, fine. You want to spend 10 minutes on Twitter, fine. But be intentional about it. Don't just spend that an hour or lose that hour on Facebook, because that is not intentional. And then you're not making the most out of it. And when you spend time, be present in the moment and put everything else on the side. So that's one. The second one is Atomic Habits, which is an amazing book about setting and adopting new habits and how you can put systems and processes to help you get there. Those are two two amazing books. And then the last one that I want to mention is a book, What You Do Is Who You Are. And this is a book about culture. And I do believe all culture and company culture and how to build a culture at the company. Because I do believe that this is paramount, especially in a startup, because you start with 1, 2, 3 founders, whatever, and then you progressively build your team. And as your team grows, you can't interact with all the people at the company with the same intensity or the same frequency as what you used to do when the team was small. If you can share that culture and make sure that all the team members will share that culture with their peers, with the new hires that you're going to bring on board, then you ensure that it kind of outlives the founders you want. And so in the end, the culture is all about what you are doing, what the team is doing. And some people say that in the end, you know, the culture of a company is like an average of the behaviors that were accepted for the past 3 months. And so it's a moving average. And so it's constant work that you have to do to ensure that the culture remains what you want. It's not like putting words on your homepage, on your landing page with, hey, here's who we are. No, it is what you actually do that makes who you are. And so that is something that we worked a lot at Rosa, because we said, okay, we want to build that great company culture. And the way we did that was we picked all those values and we even did a survey about the values that were important for, I would say, the people working at Rosa. And then we started to say, okay, what is tricky about values is not picking one value. It's what is tricky is when two values conflict. Okay, so take, for example, being healthy and being dependable. So as developers, as engineers, we usually want to be dependable. Okay, like we want to say yes, we want to deliver, we want to be on time. But at some point, if you are dependable up to a point where you become unhealthy, then you are at risk of burning out. And so long term, it is not good to trade off being dependable at the expense of being healthy. And so we have those trade-offs where we say, hey, at Rosa, we value being healthy over being dependable. And we try to apply that on a daily basis when we need it. And so we have those trade-offs. And one of them is very, very very powerful. We are a startup, but we have the following trade-off. We say that we value our mission more than growth. But at the same time, you know, even if we are a not-for-profit, growth is what will make Rosa succeed. If we do not grow, if we stop growing, then we can't succeed because we need those extra hospitals, because we do need those extra health professionals on the platform, because we do need to have more patients coming to the platform to attract those health professionals and vice versa. And so growth is paramount and required for our success. But what we say is that we don't want to grow at the expense of our mission. And so at some point, if we have to make a trade-off between being mission critical or doing something that is important to carry our mission, then we have to pick that over growth. Okay, so we have to trade off, and I think those are really, really important, and they really define who we are. And the book, What You Do Is Who You Are, kind of also helped us to build those values and those trade offs.
Antoine, thank you so much for today's discussion. It was a pleasure to host you.
It was my pleasure, and thank you for having me.
Thank you so much.